the whole reason that Spectrum Writing started, which is the company that I run to help autistic storytellers, it came about from working in the field of delivering workshops and, mentoring and facilitating visits in schools and things, and talking a lot about writing. Is that the point that got me to there was difficult because I didn't have the tools to get there. It was just blind luck and just boneheadedness that got me through all of the roadblocks that a lot of people give up on, because it is, it's really hard. And it's a lot of rejection, a lot of moments where you have to have a thick skin to keep going, like even just to keep going. And it's, anyone that's finished the book knows that it is hard graft to get through your 80,000, 100,000 words. It's hard graft. And just doing that, you deserve a medal. Pat on the back at least, because you've done a great job. And then to compete against the everyone else that's done that, to find your publication and find your audience and stuff, becomes harder again. So it's just one of those things that, I think if you can have that sense of purpose and take pride in what you're doing, that can help you through a lot of stuff in your own life. But yeah, I found it very hard. I went along to standard writing groups and didn't belong, didn't fit in, didn't have good advice, or the things that I sort of put forward were just a bit too wacky and didn't really get that love that I was hoping for, and the support. And so some of the stuff was useful, but a lot of it I was just like, well, these people have just like made me feel like this small, so why would I come here and put myself through this every week? So I just sort of tried to do it myself from that point largely. But I wanted to give a proper writers group to people like myself a proper opportunity and a pathway to get published. And this is a big misconception about people on the spectrum, is that we don't really have imaginations. And I think that's evident that we absolutely do. I think we've got the most imagination out of a large Venn diagram of the population. Very, very active imaginations, brilliant world builders, terrible follow through is the thing I've observed. That we are really good at, coming up with all the stuff, but it's like actually, organizing your executive abilities to get it done becomes tricky. Which is why deadlines are very helpful, because you've got no excuse or no choice. You've just got to do it.
Can I
So,
ask, sorry, what was the
oh, yeah.
catalyst? What was the catalyst that sort of triggered you to focus on building this this entity now known as Spectrum Writing?
Yeah, it was an interesting moment because I was working with, and I had been working a lot for places like Writers SA, the SA Writers Centre, which is now Writers SA, sister organisation to Queensland Writers. And they do great work, all these places. Like, they really do their best to help the general population of writers. And I was doing mentorships and also running their team writers group. And I noticed that out of the people in the team writers group, the ones that seemed to get the most out of my method were the other people that were very obviously autistic or ADHD or neurodivergent in some way. And I was like, that's interesting that they're the ones I'm reaching the best, and they're the
And
ones.
could you spot them a mile off?
Oh yeah, you get a radar.
I've got a friend, and his son's Aspie, and his superpower, as he says, is that he can spot an Aspie from, walk in a room and go, "There you go, there's one," and he'll just beeline over to them and start talking to them because he knows they'll get him.
It's you get a radar for it pretty quickly, and that's my son is on the spectrum as well, and you figure that out pretty quickly. But the main catalyst, Jack, was that I got into a mentorship with a young lad, and he sat down and told me his idea for this book. And we knew that he was autistic from the get-go. The Writers' Centre sort of said, "Oh, this is the person that we want to line you up with, because you're a fantasy storyteller, and he wants to do a fantasy." And they mentioned he was autistic, and I said, "Well, I am too, so this should be good." And I've never hit it off over dinner with anyone as good as I did with this kid. And he talked me through his book, which he's still working on, and he's been working on it for a number of years, and that's fine because it will take as long as it takes. And he had such an inspiring idea, and he was like, "I just want to like have a purpose and I want to do something. And, you know, this is the thing that I've always wanted to do. And I've said, well, you know, this is you're of course, you're a writer now and you've absolutely got to follow this through. And I said, and if you do this, it's going to be incredible. It's basically, I don't want to give too much away in case this does become a published thing and then I'll shout it from the heavens for this guy. But it is such a good idea. And I just left that room buzzing and I got home to my wife and I said, I know what I need to do now. And within 6 months, I'd quit my job and was doing only working with people on the spectrum, doing creative workshops and also combining Dungeons and Dragons games into that because that's creative storytelling by stealth. So it's teaching people to collaborate and all the rest of it. And it went from those two groups and a handful of mentoring of mentorships that I was doing with other people. So we put the call out and we were just swamped by people that needed this and no one was doing it. So it was sort of the one thing in the world that I was naturally suited to do, right place, right time. The NDIS scheme ensured that a lot of people could do this and pay myself and then eventually my staff a living wage. And from the beginning of that, we've now got 26 groups across metropolitan Adelaide and online, wow. and some people even overseas we've been mentoring.
And it looks like you've really built up a terrific team of professionals as well.
Oh, they're wonderful. They're the best people and they're doing it for the right reason. Like they're so caring and passionate about everything that, you know, all of the people that come along to our sessions, it's like just a big, beautiful family of people that, you know, they're just about beating the door in to get inside and then we can never get them out. You know, this is where the people that, you know, they've got their purpose, they've got their friends, they can talk someone else's ear off about their story idea and know that the person's going to get it. And more importantly, they're going to come back with something helpful. And, you know, we have these facilitated workshops that instead of just giving you like death by PowerPoint, it's actually like bite-sized useful stuff because of course you know squirrel so you know we're going to run off for the shiny things. So it's how do we keep we got to keep people just like pumping that stuff out and keep them going. So that's one big approach that we've used to try and break through demand avoidance, which is a big thing with neurodivergent people just in general, is that if now, a term of demand avoidance clinically is when you are a super procrastinator, but to the point where it's like debilitating. It's not just like, oh, I'm going to put that off. It's like that thing. It's like sitting in your driveway with your shopping in your car, and instead of unloading your shopping, you're on your phone for like 45 minutes because getting out of your car and unloading the car is just too hard. Like that's demand avoidance. And, you know, the extreme versions of that are just debilitating. Very common with people with ASD, so we try and bust through that demand avoidance stuff. And, you know, like keeping it, bite-sized, because if we say write a book, that is such a big overwhelming task that a lot of people will fall over at that. But if you go like, tell me three things about this character, that starts to become a bit easier. And then it's like describe one physical thing about this character. You could probably do that, and then you can start to hang the other bits and pieces across that and then build that scaffold and then drape something over it, and voila, you've got a plot and a story and all the rest of it. And we've got some great worksheets and models and things that we've built to try and support that mode of learning.
And just on that, that was the next question I was thinking, in terms of you've created content so that you can deliver your workshops for a particular audience in a particular way, and you said you've started building worksheets. And how did that come about, that you started to sit down and say, okay, how do we let's flesh this out, let's actually build a curriculum, and how did you do that?
Oh yeah, because I was flying at the seat of my pants for a long time. When I'm playing the teen writers group, I had just to keep the kids interested, I kept coming up with new ideas each week. There's character, there's plot, there's all of, conflict, all of the standard kind of storytelling stuff. But to do it in a way that would keep people interested and put like, just fun games and break things up and just like the wacky sort of gamified nonsense that are put into things to just keep, you know, people interested, because that's the hardest thing. And I've learned that from going into schools, is that you will lose kids really quick. You will lose autistic kids even quicker. So you've got to like engage them very fast, and you know, really speak to them and allow them to belong and be a part of the thing. So like we invite them to be a part of what we're doing. We're not just talking at them and saying, you know, you're in this now. A lot of, you know, fun sort of group activities, you know, a lot of card games and things get busted out here. You know, we've got a spinning chook raffle wheel, like a blackboard kind of wheel that's got options on there. And, you know, we have like different conflict things that we can throw in to a story idea. So yeah, there's lots of just things to do to keep it interesting. But when, and I ended up, you know, I've given away running a lot of the modules myself that I'm sort of more in management now, and you know, putting my hand in to do things every now and then. But you know, I still do workshops and bits and pieces. But at the height of that, I had 3.5 years worth of modules in the tank. And you know, that's, and you know, I've brought in other people to help me with that aspect of it now, and they've provided stuff. So there's like several years worth of modules and content that we've already put together that we can deliver. And if they're, and you know, we start up new groups every now and then.
And how many people will you have in a group?
So we keep it small, between 8 and 10. Right. So we don't go any bigger than that, because then it's just too rowdy.
Yeah.
You know, we want to keep it quality content. So yeah, we've got a lot of stuff in the tank, and yeah, particularly my writing facilitator Emma, who is running a lot of stuff at the moment, she's like a mother hen. And that's what these kids need, is an absolute mother hen, that they feel safe and that they can like bring these ideas and not feel like, because this is the thing, that their whole lives they've been told that they're wrong and different and strange. And you know, that, you know, if they bring something out beautiful and unique from within their skull, you're scared it's going to be like mocked or laughed at or whatever. And it's like, you've got to be so gentle with these precious little babies. And you know, let them, especially the little brain babies. And it's like, yeah, look at my little brain baby. And you've got to be so encouraging and kind and helpful with that, because that, you know, it'd be so easy to stomp on that. And
yeah,
I've been to writing groups where people just stomp on people's ideas and shit, and it shouldn't be done, but it does happen. So you know, this is where we have a special group that really looks after our people, because they, you know, they need the TLC, they need a bit of that stuff, and with that encouragement and that environment, just thrive, absolutely thrive. And we're seeing people like submitting stories to publication and everything now. We're putting together a book of our own, so we're doing an anthology of stories based around their special interests. We were involved in the Adelaide Festival quite recently, where we got to go, it was a part of the Adelaide Festival to do with an environmental, how do I explain this briefly? It was called Floods of Fire, and it was to do with the bushfires in recent years, you know, environmental concerns and all the rest. It was a multifaceted art form thing, exploring environmental things. And so they asked us to be involved to get out some of our students to read out pieces, which we did, but we said, all right, environmentally themed stories we'll read out. So we did a whole bunch of those for a crowd. But then I said, we can do better. Let's do something cool. Why don't we have a team of people trying to destroy the world and a team of people trying to save the world, and have this kind of like crazy live debate thing? And just like brainstorm this idea in front of the director and the producer there and then. And they loved it, and we pulled it off. So we got these, so sort of like a, you know, like a war game exercise, where we were like, okay, you're like the evil bastards trying to destroy the world, and you're the ones trying to save it. Like, you know, how are your decisions sort of compete with each other? And it was so much fun. And all of these kids got to go out in front of a live audience, and their families all came out, and it was like, just like a spectrum writing session in one of our, at one of our sites, except this was in public. And some of the kids were terrified before they got up in front of the thing. But as authors, like, you know, you've got to have that, you almost have to be a Toastmaster these days. You have to be able to talk in front of, and you know, this is another thing, is that by stealth, we're teaching them all these things. We're like, okay, that wasn't so scary. You got in front of people and you talk.
You say that you're very nurturing, and obviously that's part of the sort of training process, but do you also teach them about the rejection that comes with being writers? Because you said that some of them are sending them off to publishers, and like, and part and parcel of that is rejection.
It's brutal. So Emma particularly, she has this sort of like a soft teddy bear that comes into the class, and if people are feeling a bit rough, they can cuddle this thing. There's a lot of that, like, just it's hard, but this is the thing that you're choosing, and it's not about you, it's about the work. And there's a lot of love that goes into that. And so we try to sort of put that across. And that's sort of the next big thing, is that we're pushing them to write, for starters, to get past the demand avoidance. We're pushing them to edit and get their things done and polished. And next thing's going to be pushing them to submit things, which is why we're teaching them, how to submit to markets. And we're putting a prize pack together of who's going to submit the most stories to the most places and open it across all our different writing groups, which would be really cool. But also to get, it's an active metric. This is the third thing of the write, edit, submit that any writer is in charge of. Is that's the third leg in the tripod. Like, you get that down, you can have a career. And if you get enough rejections back on a story, you just bounce it around to the next one. If you get a bit of feedback saying the story's not right, you put it up on the blocks and you get under the engine and fix it a bit. But, there's no reason any story won't eventually find a home if it's told properly. So that's the whole thing about making it a career of this stuff. And it's hard to make money out of writing, but you can make money out of it. It's a good second income. I would say most people make a good second income from it. Some people make it lucky and get the big sales and do really well, but for most of us, we can say particularly the neurodivergent people who are classically unemployed or underemployed, that this is a big focus, is that we know that this is a thing that they can do without facing the office politics and conflicting instructions and horrible workplaces and all of that stuff. It's something that if they're passionate about it, they can have it their whole lives, and they can make money from it and have a purpose. It's really good for the mental health.
For the adults that are, I assume that you run programs for different age groups.
Yeah. It's so the groups we have, ages 12 and up. Our oldest at one stage, we had a 12-year-old sitting next to a 67-year-old at one point, and they were like buddies. It was like beautiful. It's the writing groups we tend to keep all ages mostly, because it's pretty universal stuff.
Right, so it's not age specific. You're happy to blend your students.
Absolutely. The only place I sort of split them up a bit more is the D&D groups, because that's not much fun if you're a grown up to be in a group of ratty kids, because they can get a bit feral. So when they get excited. So that's where we break them up. But mostly we would say, it's some, the rules are consistent no matter what you're doing, no matter what stage you're at. A writer is a writer is a writer. So
And particularly for the adult, I guess this is what I was leading to in terms of my question around the different ages of your students. So for your more mature adult students, are you finding, is it a blend of people who are doing this just as their own personal enjoyment versus writers who are saying, this is something I really want to take seriously? Is it a mix of people that are sort of doing it for enjoyment versus people that are kind of striving to take that next step in their writing and publishing journey?
I would say it's people leaning towards wanting to do it seriously. It's people that have got the writing bug and have had it forever. I don't think any of them are really hobbyists. I would say that they've all got a burning need to tell their stories and to be accepted and belong. We've got a metric for that, which is publication. That's a sense of acceptance that a lot of autistic people need. That beautiful magic moment is what I'm hoping we can get more and more of our people to feel, and that's the reason that we exist. That's the main reason that we exist, and the second reason is that I get to like buy a lot of Dungeons and Dragons stuff and claim those tax.
I like that idea.
But it's also a big social thing as well, that we've got big, you know, this is people that come along to our groups. A lot of them don't have friends at all outside of what we do. And sometimes it's the only thing they look forward to doing. So, you know, they might not have a great home life. They might, we're seeing a few people that have got jobs or volunteer and stuff, but some people don't get out much. And this is a way of engaging with the world and finding people that are into the same field of interest that they are in, and you know, getting them to, you know, see that there are other people just out there just like them, and that they're normal in whatever. I mean, normal is only really a sitting on the washing machine, let's be honest. But, you know, that's but you know, that there are other people just like them who, you know, they're not alone. And they don't have to be alone. And this is the, you know, the beautiful thing that we're seeing, a lot of collaboration and, you know, just wacky fun projects that are sort of happening outside of things. We've got a Discord server for our, just across our organization, and it's just mad. These kids, and I say kids like, you know, leaving grown adults, you know, they're just constantly on this thing with memes and all sorts of just ideas and just funny things, and, you know, and some of the groups run on there as well if they're doing something online or whatever. But yeah, it's so, yeah.
In terms of the structure of your workshops, is it, if you just kind of break it down in a little bit more detail regarding the actual structure, are we talking about, do the students come once a week? Is it evenings, daytime? What's the frequency and duration of, say, if it's a, is it, like a semester, or how does actual program work? Is it started on a particular date and then they sort of progress through to a completion date, then you start a new group? You know, just more the sort of the nuts and bolts around the structure of your workshops.
Absolutely. Nuts and bolts wise, our groups, if you get into one of our groups, because we've got wait lists out the door, but it's nuts. We've got such a long wait list for just about everything we do. You're in there for life if you want to be. We keep the, so some of our groups have been going for nearly 5 years now, and they come during school terms, school holidays, we shut down, but they come fortnightly, once a fortnight on a weeknight, 6:30 to 6 o'clock till 7:30. And, you know, that's the sort of face-to-face time, but, you know, there's a lot of things now around that. So, you know, there's the, you know, the online community where they're all chatting away, and, you know, we're doing other things like the writing camps as well, where we have people come in once a year or so. We just let them take over our facility here, and then we bring pizzas in, and we have like writing bingo and just games. And, you know, we did a lot of NaNoWriMo. We had a NaNoWriMo camp, which is the, you know, 50,000 words in November thing. Yeah, we do all sorts of just wacky stuff around that. So in terms of the... Yeah, we keep getting asked about doing school holidays things, but yeah, I don't know if we've got the spoons to do that. We've got to, like, yeah, give every our staff lives as well. You know, we might look at it in the future, but yeah, it's one of those things that we can't, yeah, entertain the thought of at the moment. Yeah, there's just, yeah, so much goes on during the terms.
Do people, are you finding your students are seeking you out on their own? They find out about you, or is there like a referral system? Given that, I suppose you are dealing with students who come from different backgrounds and different, so disabilities or challenges, or what is there a set process in terms of how people sort of get, if I should use the word, accepted into your workshops or your programs?
That's fair enough. So we used to advertise at the beginning. And we don't advertise anymore because we're like beyond capacity. the word of mouth does everything now. So we don't have to advertise, which is a nice way to be. But yeah, we get new inquiries nearly every day about things that we can help with, whether it's a workshop or a mentorship. Mentorships are big as well. So there's frequently mentorship spots available. As people sort of, you know, they're active or they disengage or whatever. So that's one that's always worth chasing up with us. And that's for people who are working on a book or a screenplay or something that they need that one-on-one attention with. And your NDIS plan, if you are on one, will cover that. So it is not money out of pocket. It's, you know, this is a way of, you know, using your plan, which is meant to like meet your goals as a disabled person. And if your goals are, you need to engage more with the world, or start a small business or seek employment or whatever, like this is one way of, making use of, your plan. So that's a good way of approaching it. The yeah, in terms of getting accepted, it's typically the way it would work is that if we have a spot on the hens team that they do come up, we would look through our wait list and try and find who we think would be, a good fit to the group, try and be fair to the people that have been waiting the longest. What's most important to us is getting the social mix right, because it's we sweat the small stuff. That's one of our internal mottos, is that we really take a lot of care in looking after our participants. We want to make sure that they're not feeling unsafe at any point, that the people that are there, it's a good mix of personality types. There's quite a lot of rigor that goes into picking new people for our groups. But once you're in there, like your goal, it's yeah, in, you know, we, it behooves us to do a very good job in that front, because and that's one of the things that we learned at the beginning, when I was just like, come in, come in, come on, come all, and just fell over more than once because we didn't vet people properly. So that's one of those things that, it is, we want to be inclusive, we want to be kind. A big part of that is, looking at, and if you're not going to gel with the people that are in the new group you've just entered, that doesn't do you any favors either. So it's sort of a good way of, looking at things. But eventually, we add groups as demand grows. We've got all sorts of things going. We're doing miniature painting now, Warhammer, tabletop war games, Monster of the Week, which is another amazing role-playing game. That's that's a fun game. It's basically like Scooby-Doo, Buffy, Supernatural. It's like, the episode of a TV show where you're like solving the problem of the day. It's a great exercise in episodic storytelling. So these are all teachable moments. Like everything we do, it's not boring. It's all about, everything is around that central aim, which is like, get your stories out. However, whatever form that takes, like, get those stories out of your head, find your audience, find your purpose, kind of thing. So.
And with your service Spectrum Writing, there's the creative writing program, but you've got other broader programs as well, don't you?
Yes, we do. So yeah, we've got the creative writing workshops is the sort of the central one. Rapidly has been overtaken by the Dungeons and Dragons program, which is just huge. Like we've got so many, there's such a need for them. It's crazy. And one of the programs that we recently adopted for that one was for the younger groups, or the ones that are really having a lot of trouble connecting socially. There is an actual therapy model of role playing, which uses modified Dungeons and Dragons game, and it's called Critical Core Game to Grow, and it is majestic. It is so good. Really, this is meant to be for people with autism who are really struggling to connect socially or follow group norms and stuff. So that's where, we've taken this on board recently to sort of learn how to do that side of things better, and it's working really, really well. The people that put this together, some people have used this to treat veterans with PTSD. The same principles kind of applies, that using this therapeutic avatar in storytelling, it does immeasurable good. It's a risk-free way of exploring real-life things, and this is again escapism with storytelling, and everything connects. Like it's a beautiful thing that we do as storytellers. I think we've got a wonderful gift that we can share with the world, and it's not necessarily, I'm the next, I don't think anyone wants to be the next J.K. Rowling anymore. She's really got to get off Twitter, that lady. The next the next Matthew Riley or whoever, like, that's one metric of success, but the other metric of success is using your talents and your gift to improve the world. And that's one thing that I've found that,
Do you, I mean, obviously being so successful in where you are, Do you have plans to expand it into other areas, other places, other locations? Is that the dream?
It's growing exponentially. So it's, we've got to rein in the growth because at one stage I tried to grow it too quickly and a couple of things didn't work. We tried an interstate move at one point and there was so much else going on that I wasn't overseeing it very well that fell over. So any business, you have to fail upwards and fail bigger, fail better. So, that was a lesson for me is like how to not do things. But yeah, I've got
Your programs are based in Adelaide or South Australia broadly.
Yes, we do have online groups as well. The person running our online writing workshop is Queensland based, but and their people in that group are from all around Australia. The mentorships are all over the place. Most of the mentors are from, New South Wales, Victoria, Queensland, some SA. So a lot of our sessions are in person, but we have got some online space there as well. I'm not against the idea of interstate again. But yeah, it's sort of like we've gone, all right, like we know we can really deliver where we can get to things. And that's where the SA plan seems to be working really well. But yeah, I'm not above franchising but or going into other states. Like as mentioned, like we've got modules, in the tank of three, four plus years. So there's a way of sort of finding the people that need this service and getting to them. But again, yeah, we're hearing from people like every day. It's definitely needed. This is a wonderful sense of purpose for people, and it's we've just got this burgeoning imagination just as a type of brain. The autistic brain really thrives in that environment because it's typically informed by quite a bit of confusion and pain and misunderstanding and all of that stuff. Is that where does a brain go except to escape from such an upbringing or such a world experience? And so that this is why we find that disability arts is such a big thing, and that I've been fortunate enough to work with a troupe of disability actors as a playwright, helping them put together some plays, and it is human dignity at its finest, because this is the thing, is that it is such a human expression, the arts, that anyone who is it just tells, it proves to the world that this person who's in front of you, who might have Down syndrome, who might be intellectually disabled or neurodivergent or whatever, they're still a person, but they've still got the same feelings that you've got. It's yeah it, and they deserve to have that audience just as much as anyone else, and sometimes that just needs a bit of scaffolding to help make it happen. So that's sort of the organizations like mine, and there's a few others out there as well for other art forms. That's why we do it. It's a worthy thing to do with the talent. So yeah.
You spoke before about measuring success. Are there any success stories that you kind of you're very proud of, and you kind of boast in terms of students who can kind of say, look, because of the program I did with Spectrum Writing, I landed a publishing deal or something great happened. Do you have those kind of success stories now
Yeah,
that you've got a
we've got
number
a
of students
couple.
coming through?
We've got a couple. So we've got we had one person who had never written prose before. They were strictly a comic writer, so they were doing their own like web comics, and they came forward saying, how do I do like better stories for my comics kind of thing? And I said, like, let's try and look at doing just stories. And we're working with them one-on-one, and as part of a mentorship, we got them to put together some short stories, and they ended up getting their short stories published in so on the web, in print, and they were podcasted as well. This one particular magazine said, I'm doing like a special and I want your story for all three. And so this was the
Nice.
first ever go that this young person had at submitting a story out into the world, and it was to have like immediate success at, rather than a lot of us, it's like, 10 plus rejections before you get anywhere. To have that immediate success, I was just like, oh my goodness, like that. I couldn't have been happier. And there's little bits and pieces that had similar stories to that, where someone's come in and said, oh my God, I just got third place in a writing contest, or I was able to get my artwork accepted into as the cover of this book for a thing that a council was doing, all of these little things, that we've encouraged them to express themselves. It might not necessarily be writing related, but and people that have written more episodes of their own podcasts. We had a lot of people wanting to do podcasts at one point, and so they've been encouraged to go off and record more episodes of their stuff, because they sort of got two episodes in and then it all got too hard. And coming to like share them with the group, which is just like a an amazing thing, that we getting them to like actually collaborate on ideas together, which is such a huge thing. So again, metric of success is not necessarily the next big book deal or whatever, but just like turning up and doing the stuff. But yeah,
It
there's
might.
like little short story publications and things here and there, and we're about to have the book come out, which is very exciting. So yeah.
And I think it's so important that you stress that, the definition, we shouldn't label success and put definitions on success. And for a lot of your students, I'm sure success means coming forward and having the courage to have a go and to put their ideas and actually frame it or structure it into something and get something completed and have something tangible to show for their work. And having people like yourself who are encouraging writers to have that go and to give them the support so they can take the first steps to the point where they've completed something and it's something they can be proud of. That's, in their eyes, I'm sure that's success. And it must be so pleasing for you to see the smiles on the faces when you see these people who are proud of their end result.
I've got the biggest success story that we've got, and of course I'm just endlessly proud of like all of these, I call them kids, some of them are like grown adults, but all these kids, all of my kids, they are their success story that we've got is the extremely anxious, nervous, painfully shy girl that we had coming to a group once. And in this at this site, it was all we could do to get her through the door the first time she rocked up. She was so shy, and she wouldn't sit at the main table with everybody else. The best we could do was to sit her on one of our office desks. So my wife and I, we run the corporate side of things from here, so we've got our office set up in here as well. So we sort of tucked her away in the corner and just said, just listen, try to stay if you can. If you have to leave, like, that's fine too. So we managed to get her to stay. And then the next day, the next fortnight, she sat there again. And then the next night, she sat on the couch in the corner, not on the main table. And every time we got closer and closer to the table, and then finally, she took a spot on a chair with everyone else. And it took most of a term to get her there. And now she's quietly joining in on the work, on the group discussions, and sharing her story ideas with people. And she hasn't left. She's stuck it out, and that's probably the biggest success in my mind, is the person that didn't leave and
Kept at it.
found comfort getting there.
And do you
That's
find that the students, obviously your staff provide the support, but are you finding that, say in this case, this young girl who's very shy, was there a lot of encouragement, support by the other students
Oh,
to embrace her into the fold?
absolutely. They're such sweethearts. They really look out for each other. That's the thing, is that autistic people are just like burdened with empathy to the point where it's debilitating sometimes, to the point that if someone's we can see someone that's sad or struggling or unhappy, that most people will just, if we're not blinkers and caught up in whatever we're doing, which happens, drop everything to, you know, help that person not feel terrible, because, you know, we know what it's like to feel terrible really, really much. So, you know, there's absolutely that love, that shared kind of feeling of, you know, belonging, you know, helping a person to connect with the group activity or the story or whatever it is that's going on. And it's, you know, to the point where, you know, I can see people who are, you know, someone will be like really upset because they're not getting something working, that they're having this sort of, you know, not meltdown, but you can see that they're a bit agitated or whatever. And, you know, I'll sometimes observe a participant saying, you know, what's going on with your story? And this, I just can't get my character to do this. And, and then they talk it out with the other person. And at that point, I just sort of sit back and watch it resolve itself. I don't have to intervene at all. And I'm like, that's just what I wanted. You know, I'm not here to like just talk at them. You know, this is, you know, them making their own thing. And so,
and I guess that's the magic of what you're offering, is that you're bringing like-minded people together to support each other.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a beautiful thing. And, you know, particularly a lot of my staff are neurodivergent as well, so we tried to be a very equitable employer for all of this stuff. And we've got some wonderful people who speak the same language. And, you know, we've got to the point where, you know, they will come in like just hyper-organized with folders and name tags and, you know, stickers and, you know, pencil cases for everyone. And it's like, you know, that's... The beautiful point of this thing is that you will get the royal treatment, because it's like you're getting an autistic person who special interest is delivering writing groups. So you're going to get like something that's like Next Planet, where it's not just a fly by night thing. It's, you know, something quite magical that, you know, that we've put together. So yeah, it's very, very pleased, very, very happy with how it's going. It's a real great purpose to life. It's certainly better than any other job I've ever had, but yeah, I'm sort
what,
of. About,
what did you do when before you quit to do this?
Yeah, I was a public servant, so I did a lot of work in government record keeping. So I did a lot of reading, sort of just sifting through boxes of old records and figuring out what to do with that stuff. So yeah, that was it was not a bad job, but it was the people. It was the people I didn't like. Mm-hmm. Like the boxes of paper. It was the people that were tricky. So, you know, office politics and whatever, it was just not for me. So, you know, I think if you can live a fully creative life, and I'm blessed that I can live a fully creative life, you know, do it. You will, you know, it is immeasurably good for you.
We are getting to the point where we can start to wrap things up a little bit, but that's I mean, it's an absolute credit to you, Jason, for what you and your team are delivering. Where can people find you?
Yeah, I've got two main web presences. So my first website is jasonfischer.com.au. So the spelling is Fischer, F-I-S-C-H-E-R. It's the German spelling of Fischer. So jasonfischer.com.au, and the website for Spectrum Writing is spectrumwriting.com.au.
And how would you recommend, so people listening to this thinking, hey, this program sounds great for me or perhaps one of my loved ones, how do you recommend, is there a contact form on the website where they can submit an application to join one of your programs?
Absolutely, yeah. We've got a great website that the first thing you see is a register button. But there's also a contact page with, you know, you can send an email that way. You can also find my phone number quite easily and ring me up or send me a text. I'm happy to chat to anyone about writing. You know, this is my passion. I want to give the gift to as many people as I can.
Well done, Jason. What you and your team have created for clearly there's a need, and your students are reaping the benefits of what you're offering. And it sounds like it's a labor of love. Your day job is your passion. so congratulations on what you've built and created. It's certainly not a small thing. So you should be very proud. So congratulations.
Oh, thanks, Jack. Thank you, Harry. It's definitely.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing your passion with us, and you know, putting it out on our podcast, because you know the way you talk about what you do is so sort of so passionate and so sort of engaging.
Oh, thank you so much. There's no reason to be anything else. It's yeah. If you're not doing those things, you're not doing the right thing.
Yeah. Well, well put, well put. Look, Jason, thank you so much. We might wrap up there. It's been our absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a lot of fun. All the best with your own personal endeavors and also all your programs that you are running with Spectrum Writing. We wish you all the best, and I'm sure you'll have success long into the future.
Maurice, thank you very much, guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, brilliant talking to you.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time. All the best. Bye-bye.